is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
This was a funny game. It was a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there, welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Monday, April 5th, 2010. What a great day! Baseball! Now, there was baseball Sunday night, but there's lots of baseball on Monday, and there's a lot of other reasons why it's a great day. Supposedly, there's a college basketball game going on today, and of course, my Philadelphia Eagles have traded away their quarterback, which I'm not too happy about. Well, I am and I'm not. But anyway, lots of baseball discussion today. We have a game to discuss, we have emails to read, we have interviews to listen to, and we have a view from third to get ready for all the games of today with. Let's start it all off with Around the Diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go Around the Diamond.
And of course, I should have mentioned that my name is Eric Carabel. Behind the glass is Jay Soderberg. And I want to thank everybody out there because I was informed on Sunday that the Baseball Today has become the number one podcast on iTunes in the sports and recreation class. I didn't even know there was such a thing, but I'm pretty excited about this, especially considering the march that the show had. I want to thank everybody for listening and for making this show do well, whether we're number one or what number we are. It's quite an accomplishment. And the other top podcasts on ESPN or on the, in the sports and rec group were Bill Simmons and the Fantasy Focus. And those are excellent shows that I listen to as well. Whatever the case is, it's good to see ESPN's podcast doing so well. And a part of that, of course, should be attributed to Jay, who does the work behind the scenes and getting it done. All I do here is pretty much talk. And today, obviously, is a great day. I'm excited. So Red Sox-Yankees was Sunday Night Baseball, and the Red Sox win the game 9-7. Nothing surprising there. I mean, you know, the teams are going to score runs. On the ESPN baseball page, the headline says, "The plot thickens. Sure, it was only the first act, but Boston's opening night win set the tone for the season-long Red Sox-Yankees drama." Personally, I don't believe that. I think it's just one game out of 162. It just so happens to be Red Sox beating the Yankees. But the Red Sox have beat the Yankees in April the last couple of years, and it hasn't meant anything in October or in the second half of the season. To me, it's just a game. It's just one game out of many. And it doesn't mean that the Red Sox are going to have more success than the Yankees or less. It doesn't mean much of anything except they're 1-0 and the Yankees are 0-1. And that won't change until Tuesday. So I thought it was an exciting game. I was interested to see how the starting pitchers fared. Sabathia, because of a lot of wear and tear in that arm. I mean, what was it, 260-some innings last year? He looked terrible. Josh Beckett in a contract season, not exactly how he wanted to start out. He looked awful as well. But as I wrote in my blog today, there's nothing to worry about with either of these guys. They're both going to be very good. I wouldn't be surprised if either of them won or both won 18 games or more. And, and Beckett's contract thing will get taken care of very soon. The guys who homered was also interesting to me. Dustin Pedroia has said he can hit at least 20 home runs, and I believe him. I mean, even if he hits a lot of just fly balls that go over the Green Monster, there's a 20 home run bat in him. He did homer for the second straight opening day. Jorge Posada, he's averaged 20 home runs for the past decade. I don't know why people think he can't do that again. And Curtis Granderson, that was a big boy home run. Okay, that was 455 feet. That was not just short right field, you know. Jorge Posada hit one off the pesky pole. That was 302. Granderson's was a big boy shot, and even in Yankee Stadium, no matter what ballpark that is, that's a home run. Granderson's sitting at least 30 home runs. He's gonna have a monster home run season. The thing is, after he hit the home run, he didn't do anything, and I'm wondering if it's going to be an all or nothing season. I wrote a long article for ESPN New York about Granderson's season. I think he's gonna hit at least 35 home runs. I mean, he could hit 40. But he might bat 250, not walk, and not steal. So, first Yankee player to homer in his first at-bat since Jimmy Winn in 1977. Brett Gardner stole home. Nice work out of Victor Martinez there. You can't let a guy steal home. I mean, you know one of the fastest guys in baseball is on third base, and Derek Jeter is obviously trying to make things happen. Why do you throw to second base? I mean, Marco Scooter had no chance. Anyway, Kevin Yukos, huge game. The bullpen's not exactly terrific there, but... Papelbon closed the door, and I think it's interesting that Daniel Bard will be that team's setup man. Jabba Chamberlain, not so great. I drafted him in one of my drafts yesterday, not needing saves. It's a league that has saves plus holds. I thought that was interesting. I mean, anyway, it's just one game. And, you know, I'll be saying, you know, if the Yankees win on Tuesday night, I'll be saying, oh, okay, well, then it's just two games. And are we going to overrate that? I just don't think it's that big. I mean, it's, you know, it's a big deal, but it's not, it doesn't mean anything for the long term. Let's get some sound from Fenway Park. And we start with Terry Francona. This is before the game. This is our old friend Peter Pasquarelli. This is Terry Francona, the Red Sox manager. Here's what he has to say.
Terry, a lot of changes to the ball club. I mean, significant guys coming in and out. Is that tough as a manager to, you know, incorporate people?
I think we're really fortunate here. I think when people come into our clubhouse, and I've said it a lot of times, but they guys get accepted in a hurry, and they don't feel new for very long. And that's something I've respected about our clubhouse since I've been here. Our guys do a really good job, whether they're young or whether they're new from another organization. Guys understand that when they come in here, they're one of us.
Much said about Beltre Cameron in terms of defense, Scudero. How do you see that defense improving this year?
Well, and again, we haven't even played a game yet, but I agree with it. I mean, I've seen enough from these guys and that we should be a very good defensive team. I mean, that doesn't mean you're not going to make errors from time to time. Everybody does. But, again, with a good pitching staff that should, you know, be confident to know they can throw the ball down the zone and get rewarded for it if it's put in play, I do think we're going to be a very good defensive team.
Opening day is always an exciting day, but with the Yankees in here, is that almost overkill?
You know, there's something to be said for that. I mean, there's a level, obviously, of excitement, but also of anxiety on opening day. I mean, I got here at 11 o'clock. That was way too early. There's only so much you can do, and you just wait to get going. It'll be good when we get into the flow of not only this game, but a lot of games, and then you can see how good you are.
People might wonder, you know, they think Red Sox, Yankees, Yankees, Red Sox. Do you come into a year every year trying to measure yourself against the Yankees or vice versa?
Well, I mean, I can understand why, you know, people say that because they've been so good for so long. I think we need to concern ourselves with ourselves. There's a lot of good teams out there. And, again, I don't need to start prognosticating because that's no good. I mean, we saw Tampa Bay enough this spring. They're good. They're really good, which doesn't bode well for the rest of the league. We know going into this we're going to have our hands full.
David Ortiz, he's been so much to this ball club for so long, had a funny year last year, and I guess there's a lot of questions about him. And would that be a tough thing to do, having to, you know, make decisions about someone of that stature?
Well, last year was hard. I mean, there's no getting around. The first 2 months were tough. I mean, there's a guy that we've leaned on for since I've been here, and before that, you know, he's been a mainstay and a you know, the almost the face of our team most of the time. He had a horrible start. The good side was he didn't quit, and he had a great last 4 months. The last thing I need to do is start poking at what he did last year. You know, again, I got to pat him on the backside so many times. When things are going tough, that's when I need to be there for guys like that.
Finally, Josh Beckett tonight. How did he look this spring? Coming off 2 years that, you know, people say weren't as good as they were in 2007, but he's somebody you always can count on.
I think he's really accountable to what he does. Not just the 90 pitches, but the 4 days in between. He's a good guy to give the ball to on opening night. Now, we're thrilled about Lester and Lackey following him and Buck and Wake, but this is a good guy to give the ball to.
Terry Francona, good luck. Long season ahead. Best of luck.
I agree. Thanks.
Okay, so there's Peter and Terry, and we'll be hearing interviews all season long, I assume, here from games that Peter's at. And let's not take it any further than that. I miss him. Anyway, interesting stuff there by Francona. And I think he realizes there's a level of excitement about opening day against the Yankees. That's the way it kind of I think it should be. But, you know, I don't think it means anything further than that. And, you know, about Beckett, what he said is accountable. That's very interesting. And, you know, he said, you know, obviously he gets the ball on opening night. There's high expectations on Beckett, especially if he gets that John Lackey-type contract. And I want to see what I think Beckett's going to be fine. But I think Beckett's next start is going to be more important than this start. And I don't know off the top of my head who Beckett's next start is against, but I'm going to look that up and see if I can figure it out. Anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting there from Francona. And Beckett's going to be fine. There's nothing to worry about there. Next start for Beckett. It looks like Boston is playing at Kansas City. You think he's going to get lit up by Kansas City? He's not. Let's also listen here to our old friend Buster Olney. He was on Mike and Mike on Monday talking about the New York Yankees, and it wasn't so positive. Let's listen to the Buster right now.
I think the big question about the Yankees going into the season is going to be their age. You know, Mariano Rivera, 40 years old. Derek Jeter turns 36 this year. Andy Pettitte, 37 years old. And catcher Jorge Posada is 38 years old. And in his ability to catch pitches, he's never been great at that. they're going to ride it out as long as the players are effective. And they were certainly good enough for this entire group to win the World Series last year. But that's, it's interesting. When you talk to scouts with other teams, they're like, you know, one of those guys is going to start getting old. It's going to happen at some point. You know, it might not be 2010, or maybe it will be. We'll see.
Interesting stuff there by Buster, and I personally do not think that they're going to be too old to perform at a World Series winning level in 2010. Wouldn't shock me one bit if the Yankees are back in the World Series. In fact, I kind of expect they're going to make a run at that, though I believe last week I picked them to lose in the American League Championship Series to the team that beat them last night. But again, none of that really matters there. The thing is, I saw the stat on the game last night, and I couldn't believe it. In all of sports, not just in baseball, the Yankee trio of Posada, Jeter, and Rivera have been together 16 years, and in no other sport can a trio match that. That's pretty impressive. But, I mean, Jeter doesn't act like he's that old, and Rivera, obviously, is still performing at a high level. The one I'd worry about is Posada, but I don't see why he can't hit 20 home runs. So, good stuff there from Buster. And of course, from Francona. All right, other news going on around baseball. Ian Kinsler on the DL for the Rangers. Not a surprise. High right ankle sprain. This could take a couple weeks. Again, I don't think Texas, I say this all the time, I don't think Texas will be eliminated in April because they lose their second baseman. But, you know, a lot of guys ended up on the DL. Scott Kazmir on the DL as well. A couple of Phillies pitchers. After our show on Friday, the Twins named John Roush their closer, which was one less thing I needed to watch over the weekend. And I wrote an article saying Roush is going to get at least 30 saves. So if you need a closer in a fantasy league, John Roush, I think, will be fine. Reds named Mike Leake their fifth starter, which is very interesting because that means he's not going to go pitch in the minor leagues at all. Although I wouldn't say ever because this might not work out so well. But Mike Leake wins the fifth starter job for Cincinnati over Travis Wood, and which he should have. He's got more talent. But, you know, what does that mean for Leake? I'm not saying he has a short leash, but, you know, a lot of these guys who make their debuts, they don't stick. At some point, Leake will stick. I'm not sure it's going to be now. Coco Crisp broke a pinky, starts the year on the DL. I don't think that's a big deal for Oakland. In fact, I like it if it makes Jake Fox a starter on opening day for Oakland. He's one of my big sleepers for this season. I think he can hit 25 home runs. He couldn't do it if he wasn't playing. He was named the backup catcher for the A's, and as a team that doesn't generally need much of a backup catcher, Kurt Suzuki plays like 145 games per year. But now that Crisp is on the DL, Rajai Davis can move over to center field, and Jake Fox can play, you know, left or right. I'm just saying, when you close the door, opportunity opens. I think Jake Fox is going to be better than Coco Crisp. Different players, of course. What else is happening? Hank Blaylock did not make the Tampa Bay Rays roster, basically because Pat Burrell makes too much money, and I haven't heard the latest on what Blaylock's going to do, but he'll find work somewhere, or he could report to their AAA team, which I honestly don't think he's going to do. And the A's actually made other news. Jack Cust, who led their team in home runs the past three seasons, designated for assignment. Eric Chavez will be the everyday DH, but I'm not optimistic that's going to last for long either. Jake Fox is going to play somewhere for Oakland, whether it's DH or a corner outfield spot or backup catcher. I'm telling you, the guy can rake. Any other news going on? That's about it, I guess. I mean, we're going to be doing news every day. It's a daily show, so anything I missed today, I can just get to tomorrow, which means it's time to move on now to your emails and call to the pen.
Call to the pen. You've got email.
Plus, it gives us lots of time, gives me lots of time to prepare everybody for Monday's action. It's so fun to just prepare for Monday. There's so many games on Monday. It's going to be awesome. Who doesn't love baseball? Send your emails to baseballtoday@espnradio.com. I'm told by Jay we need good questions for the next couple of days. So, you know, I want to get to three a day, which means we have to have three good questions a day. Jeff Bacon in Ottawa, Canada. Bacon. I'd love to hear your thoughts on which division overall has the top players at each position. For example, the AL East is stacked with second basemen. Aaron Hill, Robbie Cano, Dustin Pedroia, Brian Roberts, and Ben Sobers. Wow. I think that is the best set of second basemen of any division. What do you think, and which divisions do you think are the best in the rest of the positions? That would take a little bit of prep on my case. I can't do that off the top of my head. I will tell you, for years, the National League East was shortstops. Hanley Ramirez, Jose Reyes, Jimmy Rollins. That's pretty good. And you know Escobar is not exactly a bad fourth guy there. It would take me some time, though, to do this, which I don't have right now. Here's a question from Chris in Alberta, Canada. Well, a lot of Canadian stuff today. I want to comment on the surge of major leaguers who have been clinically diagnosed with social anxiety and or depression. That's uplifting. While certainly not a new phenomenon, it is refreshing to see more and more players step forward and seek help, and for coaches, management, fans to acknowledge that this is a genuine and very serious health issue, and not just a ploy for attention or sympathy when they're not performing up to their potential. I don't know who would have said that, Chris. Nobody thinks that people are trying to get sympathy or attention. But it is a serious health issue. You go on to mention some of the players here that have dealt with this in the past. Zach Greinke is one of the biggest names. I mean, he won the Cy Young Award last year. But a couple years ago, we didn't know if his career was going to get back on track. Dontrell Willis right now is dealing with that, and it looks like he's in the rotation as the fifth starter. But I don't know if he's not pitching well because of any anxiety issues or because he just doesn't have the same stuff. Joey Votto dealt with it. Justin Dukeshire. Khalil Greene. It's a shame. Khalil Greene had, I thought, a terrific career ahead of him. San Diego Padres shortstop, he knocked in like 90 runs one year, hit over 20 home runs in a tough ballpark. It's proof you can hit home runs in San Diego. And his career just derailed. He was signed by Texas this offseason to a short deal, and it just, he couldn't, I don't pretend to know what these guys are dealing with. I'm not a doctor. I just hope the best for them. And I hope Dontrell Willis does well, because he's the one guy now who's in a rotation who needs to overcome this. I'd like to see him do well. Good email there from Chris. And, shines light on something here, but I would never assume that this is a cry for sympathy. I just think they need help. And if they get the help, then they can overcome it, as we've seen with Greinke and Votto. And the third email of the day, this is another one from Canada. Where are all the emails from the United States of America? This is Ken and Abby from Abbotsford, British Columbia, Canada. Hey, Eric, I love the podcast, and so does my dog, Abby. Okay. We listen to it every day on our walks, or at least every day you have a podcast. Well, we're every day, Monday through Friday now. We're Seattle Mariners fans. We live 3 miles north of the 49th parallel and 2 hours away from Safeco. Safeco is a great, great ballpark, by the way. I saw a playoff game there a couple years ago. You and many of our guests say that you don't think the Mariners can win the division because of their hitting. What's wrong with the Mariners hitting? The best leadoff hitter in baseball is Ichiro, and now with Figgins to move him around, Jose Lopez is a consistent 90 RBI guy, and Franklin Gutierrez is coming into his own as a hitter as well as defensively. They have a solid bench, too, led by Mike Sweeney, probably the all-time good guy in baseball. Please explain why you think the Mariners hitting makes them a second or third place team. Keep up the great work. Abby and I are really looking forward to listening to you this year. By the way, our worst day at Safeco is better than our best day in the office. I hear you on that, Ken. I've often, when I was growing up, I used to say our worst day at Veterans Stadium is better than any day at school. And that was always true. Of course, Veterans Stadium quite a bit dirtier than school was. But, the same goes for Citizens Bank Park. I love it there. And, you're right. Any day at baseball, any day on the golf course, better, of course, than being in the office. I'll say this about the Mariners. When I made the predictions on Friday's show, I got a lot of feedback, generally from Minnesota Twins fans, who seemed angry, personally angry, that I would not pick the Twins to win the division, that I think that they need to prove something. People, I don't think the Twins need to prove anything. Okay, you ask me who I think is going to win the division, and I tell you what I think is going to happen. And I think the Twins have a very good team, and I think so do the Tigers and the White Sox. And I just happen to pick the White Sox. You can pick the Twins, but this isn't a respect issue. I didn't pick the Twins to finish in second place in the American League Central because they haven't proven anything, or that they need more respect. They have plenty of respect. They have arguably one of the best two or three players in baseball. I mean, after Pujols, I think Joe Mauer might be next when you consider defense and all that and age. Justin Morneau's terrific. They've got good enough pitching. I think Francisco Liriano, I've talked about a million times, is going to have a terrific season. I don't know what they need in respect. It was all about respect for Twins fans. Give up on the respect aspect, okay? I mean, I'm not rooting against the Twins by any means, or the Mariners for that matter. I think the Mariners are going to be right there with the Angels. I think I picked, the Angels for like 86 wins and the Mariners for 85. I don't think it's a respect issue. I think it's pretty clear that on paper, the Angels have a better offense than the Mariners. The Angels led baseball in offense last season. I think they scored more runs than the Yankees, more runs than the Phillies, I know. Angels were terrific last year offensively. And yes, they lost Sean Figgins and replaced him with a guy who's not going to do the same type of thing in Brandon Wood, though I argue that Maceiras Torres is going to play half of the time at third base and will do something like what Figgins did. But, you can't compare the middle of the Seattle order to the middle of the Angels order. It's not the same thing. So I would say, Jose Lopez is a consistent 90 RBI guy. Franklin Gutierrez looks like he's going to bat third this season, and I think he's going to become a terrific player. But overall here, I mean, don't give me Mike Sweeney. I think the Angels have a better team than Seattle. And part of it now, I think, is Cliff Lee, who looks like he's going to miss more time than we thought. Bullpen, I think the Angels, I would take the Angels. Rotation, obviously Seattle's got the top two guys, but I think the Angels have more rotation depth. And I think Scott Kazmir will come back soon. I think the Mariners have a very good team, and I think they can win the division, but I don't pick them to, and I don't think they have quite the hitting. They did not need a Sean Figgins type as much as they needed a big 30-home run guy. Russell Branyon was integral to that team last year because he hit for power, and then in the second half, he didn't do anything, and the Mariners fell apart. They need power. Jose Lopez is fine, but he's really not a number three or four hitter. Anyway, thank you for the email, Ken. You're right. Baseball is awesome, and any day at a ballpark is better than a day pretty much anywhere else. And I think the Mariners and the Twins are going to be fine this season, but it's not about respect. It's just I think there's a team better than their own division. All right, those are your emails. Keep sending them at baseballtoday@espnradio.com, as you can tell. We need emails. We need good ones. How about the United States step up on Tuesday? Anyway, now it's time for the first time this season, The View from Third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchup.
This is The View from Third.
And I'll be viewing lots of baseball today. First, I personally will be watching the Phillies and the Nationals as President Obama throws out the first pitch and then Roy Halladay throws out the next 110 in a complete game win. ESPN's family of networks, of course, will be covered. And also, Phillies and Nationals is on ESPN Radio, I am told, at noon. So you can look for that. The ESPN family of TV networks has a lot of games. The Cardinals and the Reds, Cleveland and the White Sox, the Cubs and the Braves. And then tonight, the Giants and the Astros. And late tonight, the Twins and the Angels, if you're not watching Butler try to beat Duke. And I'll be watching both those things. Honestly, I can juggle. I'll be watching the NCAA title game, and I'll be watching probably San Francisco Houston. It's the only 7:05 p.m. Eastern time game, so I'll be watching that. And then late tonight, I'll be watching. Well, look, I'll be watching everything. But one of the things that jumped out to me about Monday's schedule is there are five games in the American League, so 10 starting pitchers. Three of those starting pitchers in the American League did not pitch last year. Which I thought, wow, that sounds pretty odd. Has that ever happened before? And then thanks to the ESPN, we get daily emails from all these stats. That's why baseball is awesome, stats and all that. Elias Sports Bureau reports that only three times over the past 50 years has an opening day starter missed the previous season. Do you know who those are? Well, I don't have a co-host, but I think if he would not get it right, I can tell you that, because these names are Carl Pavano of the Yankees in 2007. He was their opening day starter? Oh, my God. Scott Erickson of the Orioles in 2002 and Alex Fernandez of the Marlins in 1999. I remember that. And those guys went 2-0 with Pavano's no decision. So the three pitchers today in the American League are Ben Sheets of the Athletics, Sean Markham of the Blue Jays, and Jake Westbrook of the Indians. And I actually wrote a blog on Monday about how Sean Markham is just being forgotten in the fantasy world. I don't understand why everybody loves Ben Sheets so much. You know, he had an ERA. His career ERA is 3.72. He's never been one of those big-time aces. He's been ace of his own teams because he was a Brewers all those years. But, I mean, this guy's been a disappointment. And I understand Oakland taking him on for $10 million and then trying to flip him at the July trading deadline. But Ben Sheets is, you know, he's okay. What's the best we can hope for? An awful spring. Anyway, Ben Sheets going on Monday against Felix Hernandez. I don't see how that can end well for Sheets, but I'll be watching anyway. Halladay against Lannon seems one-sided, but, you know, stranger things have happened. Chris Carpenter going for the Cardinals today. The Mets are opening against Florida, and it's Johan Santana on the mound. And I'll say this about the Mets. They don't have to win today's game, okay? It's a fallacy to say, well, your ace has to win every time he goes out. They don't do that, okay? The Mets season won't be lost if they lose to Josh Johnson. But I think Johan Santana does need to pitch well, because after Santana, it's not so pretty for the Mets. And I'm not Mets bashing, okay? I think Buster Olney and pretty much everybody would tell you that John Main, Mike Pelfrey, John Neese, Oliver Perez, the Mets need Johan Santana to have a really good season if they're going to contend. I think it's pretty obvious. Vicente Padilla, who I think is going to have a pretty good season, opening day starter for the Dodgers. Who would have guessed that? Ubaldo Jimenez and Giovanni Gardeau, that's a nice matchup of strikeout right-handers there. Zach Greinke against Justin Verlander is also very enticing. And
Greinke, Verlander, huge strikeout guys in that game. I mean, you got opening day, and you're going to get the top pitchers. I mean, not in every case. I mean, we got John Garland going against Dan Heron, but still a very interesting day of games. And you know, there was American League guys. I'll just say this to people who put a lot of stock in opening day: it's just a day. It's just a day of games. That's all it is. You don't win or lose a pennant on opening day. This could be the last opening day for Bobby Cox, who has done very well in opening days over the last, 20 seasons. 577 on opening day, is that what that says? Or I don't know what that means. Bobby Cox in his last opening day. The most consecutive opening day starts, active streaks. Halladay has 7, although now for a new team. Roy Oswalt of 7, and Carlos Zambrano with 5. How about that? Well, you wouldn't have expected, I don't know if you would have expected Zambrano there. The best opening day records among current teams, the Mets have the best opening day record, 31-17, 646, not even close. Yankees and Orioles, 577, 573, Brewers and Cubs. I don't buy a whole lot into that. I mean, I'm not trying to take away the accomplishment of the Mets. I mean, the Mets could win today. They absolutely could win. They've got their ace on the mound. But, you know, what you do on opening day, I mean, if you have a winning percentage of 330 in game twos over the last 20 years, then it doesn't really mean a whole lot there. Let's bring in Jay now. Jay, opening day is exciting for everybody. Your team, the Red Sox, is off to a grand start, 1-0. So what are you going to be watching on the opening day for most of the rest of the baseball?
Probably Dancing with the Stars. I'll keep it within the company, but, you know.
Really? How's that going, by the way?
I'll give the wife control of the TV tonight.
That's embarrassing. You should be thrown off the show.
The Red Sox aren't playing today. They played last night.
Don't you like baseball?
I like it somewhat, but I've already admitted I follow football much closer than I follow baseball.
You know, it's funny.
If it was the opening day of football, I'd be in front of the TV watching every single football game. Not the same way with baseball.
When we did the Rob Neyer interview 2 weeks ago, and Rob basically said he never watched any spring training, and, you know, there was some feedback there saying, how can you bring a guest on who doesn't watch, you know, baseball? And then, you know, when you said that day, well, you don't even like baseball that much, and people were saying the same thing about you, and I was like, well, yeah, he's the producer of the show. I mean, it's not vital that he watch. Tell me how is Erin Andrews, our good friend, doing on the show?
She's doing all right. I've only seen one episode. I didn't watch it last week.
Oh, it was on last week?
It's on. It's on every Monday. And then I believe the results are every Tuesday.
You think it's on tonight live, a new one, alongside...
Of course it's live.
And there's no NBA basketball today because of the NCAA tournament championship game. And there's a live Dancing with the Stars?
Of course it's live.
Doesn't that seem odd?
Why would that seem odd?
How can the ratings be that great up against Butler Duke and baseball?
I can tell you right now, the ratings for Dancing with the Stars will win the night. Dancing with the Stars will win the night tonight.
That's embarrassing. All right. Anyway, you know, I guess I have nobody to bounce baseball off of on this show because Jay's not watching baseball today. But I am going to make up for that deficiency in our show.
See, what you just said isn't true either. I'll tune in to a couple of games here or there, like,
but you don't
especially
care.
The stuff that's on ESPN. I mean, I have to. It's part of my job.
No,
I've got
not.
The NBA Today podcast coming up next with Ryan Russillo. I got to tune into some NBA games as well.
Well, you're not going to find any today because there aren't any.
Well, I don't have to worry about the NBA today,
I? Good luck to you and Ryan.
Thank you.
Anyway, great day of baseball. I'm looking forward to it. I think we filled our time quota for the day. Anything else we need to get to? No promos or anything? Nothing?
Okay. I think we're good.
We're all good.
Log on to ESPNNewYork.com. It's the newest local site.
Is that right?
I'm sure there's lots about Boston, New York from us.
It's just one game, people. That's the only advice I'll give you on the Red Sox and the Yankees. That is just one game, that Josh Beckett will be fine, that Curtis Granderson is going to do what he does no matter one 455-foot home run. You know, there was another game. The Giants played the Mariners 7-1. Seattle won in a rain-shortened game.
And game didn't count, though.
The game it didn't count in the actual standings that matter.
So there
but
you
now
go.
Every game from now on will count, and we'll see what the standings look like on Tuesday morning. I'll be back on Tuesday. I don't know who will be with me, but obviously we'll get some sound from somewhere. Do we know where the sound will be coming from?
You're probably from a guest.
You're not going to answer that, are you?
Okay. No, we'll have a guest. I'm sure.
All right. Whatever. That's it. Monday's a wrap. We've got 6 more months. 7 more months, actually. It's not just the regular season on this show. So 7 more months of this. Going to have to take care of my voice. Watch all the games on the ESPN family and networks. And thanks again to everybody who has made this show successful. Number 1 on iTunes Sports and Rec, which, hey, brought a smile to my face. And, Jay, I'm sure you'll tell all your friends and your managers and everybody, and we'll all have a big party. That's it. It's a wrap. We'll be back on Tuesday. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.